Thanks, Shane. Hi, friends. How are we doing? Happy New Year to you. I'm glad you're here today. I've asked our friend Rob Harder to share from the scriptures this morning. Rob's the executive director of the Christian Center of Park City, which is a humanitarian community resource center that improves the lives of many people throughout our region. We're thankful to call the Christian Center one of our ministry partners. I'm thankful to call Rob my friend. And I got to tell you, today he's bringing to us a powerful message from a powerful psalm. In fact, it's one of my favorite psalms. And I'll tell you this, if you take these words to heart, if you trust what the psalm says is true, it will utterly alter the year to come. No matter what this year brings, I pray that no matter where you are in this spiritual journey, that today you'll open your heart. Let God speak to you. Will you bow your heads with me? I want to pray before he comes. Father, in this moment, I pray that every person in this room would come to know you more. And more than that, may they come to trust you with every problem, with every success, with everything they face today and throughout this year. May they come to trust you and put their hope in you. I pray this in the name of the King. Amen.
Thank you, Troy, and good morning, Capital Church. How are you? Good. Again, Happy New Year. Shane already said it. I say it also. The first Sunday of 2018, and you're in church, so you all get a good gold star. Just put it on your list right now. Gold star for everybody. Hey, it is kind of fun to start the first of the year reviewing the last year. So what I'd like to do is just kind of with you, review some of the top stories, not necessarily the highlights, but just the top stories that filled our news feeds this past year. And it started about a year ago with the presidential inauguration. And I don't think I remember our country ever more divided after that inauguration as this past year in 2017. And then also a little bit more positive thing was, you remember the total solar eclipse? In fact, how many people actually went to go see it live? You drove all the way out there to see, okay, cool. There are a lot of people from this church went out there. Total solar eclipse, very, very unique event that happened in 2017. Another thing that continues to come up, in fact, it just popped up again, is the North Korean crisis. In fact, now it's gone to Twitter and talking about buttons and who's going to push which button. And if it actually is almost comical if it wasn't so serious, but that continues to be a major issue. And then last year, honestly, probably the low light of last year, and it was just a horrendous thing, was the Las Vegas shooting. Many of you remember exactly where you were when you heard about it, because you just can't imagine how could someone do such a thing. Just horrible. And that happened in 2017. Another thing that happened in 2017 was the sexual harassment. The hashtag MeToo movement just took off. It started with media mogul Harvey Weinstein, but it just continued to have this ripple effect, didn't it? And just most guys were just falling, like, you know, these people that we know, and we know these movies and know these actors and these TV anchors, and they were just falling because of the sexual harassment scandal and the MeToo movement. And women are now empowered in a whole new way to tell their story. So that happened in 2017. And then this past year, it wasn't an unusual year of intense, like unusually intense and impactful natural disasters, we call them, right? From Hurricane Harvey that devastated Houston, right? To Hurricane Maria, devastated part of the Caribbean, and Puerto Rico still kind of climbing out of that one. The fires in California, both north and south, feels like the whole state's on fire. And the lack of snow in Utah, I mean, that's close to a natural disaster. Certainly Park City. But seriously, that just, our climate is changing, and most people are convinced it's, our climate is changing drastically, and that's why we're having these crazy storms and the intensity. Well, also then coming back right here to Utah, President Trump visited Utah not too long ago. But he came here in order to reduce the size of national monuments and creating another controversy, another firestorm right here in our own state of Utah. And then remember last year, the arrest of nurse Alex Wubbles? Wasn't that the strangest thing? This guy tries to arrest a nurse and she runs away from him, and he catches up with her and kind of throws her in the car. Just a bizarre series of events, all caught on video. And she ends up winning a lawsuit and made quite a bit of money out of that one. But what an interesting, weird story. And then people, all of us, we've been down to Pioneer Park. If you go down to downtown Salt Lake, the homeless issue just continued to be a rising issue. There's more and more tensions rising. And so they developed Operation Rio Grande to really address this homeless issue right in our own city of Salt Lake. And that was something that really dominated the headlines in Utah anyway. Then on the sports front, the Houston Astros won the World Series. Do we have any Houston Astro fans? We got a few. Wow. That was so exciting and passionate. But I was glad because, you know, after the hurricane, that was a really cool story. The Houston Astros won. That was fantastic. And then the New England Patriots won the Super Bowl. And that's kind of like Darth Vader winning the universe. You know, it's kind of, it's the same. Like the darkness has fallen across the world. Any Patriot fans? Oh, we are, there's way too many of them. Could you please leave now? Because the darkness is spreading, Troy. I don't know. We're going to have to raise the standards of who are welcome. No, just kidding. Just kidding. Kind of. Anyway. No, then Golden State won the NBA title. They dethroned Mr. James, King James. Cleveland Cavaliers tried to get it again, but nope. Golden State Warriors won the NBA title. Stephen Curry is now back at the top of the NBA world. Then in the world of movies, Moonlight won the Oscar for Best Picture last year. And then the music world, Adele swept up the Grammys. She won Album of the Year, Record of the Year, and Song of the Year with Hello. And so that was some of the top stories of 2017. And then there's this other thing. I don't know if you've ever done this, and you got to be a little careful of this, but you can type into Google strange stories of 2017. And there's some really strange stories that happened last year. I'm just going to highlight two of them, all right? This first one, and you may have just humored me, but I found this to be kind of funny. The police outside of Rochester, New York couldn't help but laugh when they got a call about a cookie-eating, trespassing squirrel from a woman's home. True story, okay? They get a call. The Brockport Police Department got a call from a woman who said that a squirrel had broken into the house and was reportedly eating cookies in the kitchen, and could you come and get the squirrel out of my house? Could you arrest the squirrel, basically, is what she was asking. They actually took a picture of the squirrel and put it on Facebook. It was crazy. Like, really? Okay. What a day being a police officer. Then the second thing, you probably saw this in social media, a Pennsylvania utility customer got the shock of her life after checking her monthly electric bill. And she saw that she owed $284 billion. Just nuts. And this is great. They called her up and she got this big interview. And here's her response. It was actually quite funny. She said, "My eyes just about popped out of my head when I saw that number. We had put up some Christmas lights and I wondered if we had put them up wrong." Awesome. She was told she had till November 2018 to pay the entire amount. How wonderful. And her first payment was only $28,000. I mean, no big deal. Strange stories of 2017. So here we are, 2018, a brand new year, a fresh start, a clean slate. And I've got to ask, first Sunday of the year, how many people have made New Year's resolutions? You want to raise your hands? Okay, good, good, good. Now, how many of you, because every service this has happened, how many of you have just said, New Year's resolution, just fooey to all of it. I don't do any of that. It's crazy. I don't do it. Anybody kind of in that category? Okay, we have a small group support group for slackers that we're going to start for all of you. I think it's more of those. No, just kidding. You know, in fact, there's a new trend that you're aware of, I'm sure. This one word trend. It's really becoming big. It's happened the last couple of years, but this year seems to be even bigger. And it's this idea to get rid of New Year's resolutions because those are too easily broken. If you've missed the gym already, you're like, I'm done, and you're depressed the rest of the year. No, let's do something different. Let's just get one word for the year and stick to that. That's easier to do. And it's kind of a nice concept, actually a cool concept. We're going to pick that up a little bit later in the service, the one word concept. But the bottom line is the first of the year, the first Sunday of the year, and I thought it would be really appropriate to launch this year starting in the Psalms. You know, for centuries, for the people of faith, the book of Psalms has been a source of comfort, encouragement, inspiration, insight. And it was really ironic. We didn't plan it this way, but Kelly spoke last weekend, if you were here, and she closed the year in the book of Psalms, and we're going to kick off the new year in the book of Psalms. And I like Troy. This is one of my favorite Psalms, Psalm 16. So I'm going to read it up here on the screen. It's going to be the NIV version. I encourage you to read along. Here we go. "Keep me safe, O God, for in you I take refuge. I said to the Lord, you are my Lord. Apart from you, I have no good thing. I say of the holy people who are in the land, they are the noble ones in whom is all my delight. Those who run after other gods will suffer more and more. I will not pour out their libations of blood to such gods. or take up their names on my lips. Lord, you alone are my portion and my cup. You make my lot secure. The boundary lines have fallen for me in pleasant places. Surely I have a delightful inheritance. I will praise the Lord who counsels me. Even at night, my heart instructs me. I keep my eyes always on the Lord. With him at my right hand, I will not be shaken. Therefore, my heart is glad and my tongue rejoices. My body also will rest secure. Because you will not abandon me to the realm of the dead, nor will you let your faithful one see decay. You make known to me the path of life. You will fill me with joy in your presence, with eternal pleasures at your right hand. Now, I have to say this, you know, in full disclosure, this last year for me, in many ways, was very good. There was a lot of exciting things happening, both in my nonprofit and in my life overall. But this year also, health-wise specifically, was one of the most difficult years for me and my entire family. Now, let me explain. Many of you heard that earlier in the year, my wife and I were biking outside of St. George, and she had this just horrific, weird, out-of-the-blue bike accident. And she landed on her face and just had all kinds of problems, broken nose, broken lip, et cetera. I mean, the bone above her lip, and just have had surgeries ever since to kind of fix everything. That was like in May of this year. And then December was just a whole kind of wonderful for the Harder family. Let me explain. So the first week of December, I got really sick. A lot of people on our staff were sick, and I thought I just had the flu. But then one night I had 104 fever. I'm like, I should go into the doctor. So I did the next day, and they did a few tests, and they're like, you actually have walking pneumonia. I'm like, oh, great. I've never had pneumonia. Awesome. That sounds good. Not. So I had pneumonia. Well, then the next week, I was already scheduled to have surgery. I had a little bit of skin cancer on my face. I had to have surgery. So that was the next week. Awesome. Back in to the hospital. So I had the surgery. Then the next day, as I'm recovering from my surgery, my daughter is playing soccer at a birthday party and randomly breaks her leg right near her ankle in three places. So I get a call, go to the ER. We were in the ER for about 4 hours. My poor kid just had so much pain. It was so painful. And we weren't quite done with the ER yet. You know, my wife, as I mentioned, had this terrible accident, had all kinds of surgeries. Well, she had one more surgery to kind of fix some things that were still not quite right. And she had the surgery. Well, then there was some bleeding that was continuing and it didn't stop. And then the next day, and so she called, should I go in? And said, sure enough, yes, you need to go into the ER because it was still bleeding. So we went back to the ER. And if that wasn't bad enough, on Christmas Day, I get a message from my dad that my mom that night on Christmas Eve had a stroke. And she was in the hospital. It was just like one thing after another after another. And I don't share that just so you have sympathy for me. I share that because I have a feeling if you had an opportunity to come up here and you told us your story of 2017, you would have just as many stories, maybe more storm stories, even more intense life-altering situations that happened this last year. I'm going to guess that many of you have had similar things. Maybe it was an economic or financial storm in your life this last year. Maybe it was a relational storm in your life. Maybe it was a health storm, kind of like my family. Maybe it's a spiritual crisis storm that hit you this last year in 2017. The fact is, we all go through storms. I'm not alone, and I'm not unique in that way. All of us face storms and face difficulties and challenges and disappointments. And so I don't know what your 2017 was, but I know it was tough for me. And therefore, as I look at Psalm 16, it just taken on a whole nother level of value to me. It just spoke to me in a very special way because of all that we went through this last month, specifically in December. And the word that really came out to me as we when I was reading through Psalm 16 again was that first word we just read in the first sentence, keep me safe, my God, for in you I take refuge. Love that word refuge. I needed a refuge this past month. And what I like to do, you've probably been around enough that Troy and I love to give you the Hebrew background to some of these words, mostly because we like to spit up on stage. It's quite fun actually to do that. Sorry, front row. But anyway, let me give you a couple of Hebrew words today. And the first one is refuge. The Hebrew word for refuge is hasa. Isn't that a great word? Hasa. And this is what it means to seek refuge, shelter, protection from danger or trouble. To take refuge from a storm, a place of shelter and protection. This great word that he says, God, you are my refuge. This is where I take protection. Now, I have a feeling that refuge maybe conjures up all kinds of images for you. I know for me, when I think of refuge, I think about this story, actually, when my wife and I Before kids, we used to do a lot of tent camping, and we lived in Colorado at the time, and we went to this place called Kite Lake. Kite Lake is a very unique place because it's at 12,000 feet, first of all, and in Colorado, there's a lot of 14,000 feet mountains, and the thing is, you can actually, there's kind of contests going on in Colorado if you live there, and it's called bagging 14ers, which means when you hike a 14er, there's actually a little place where you can sign off and say, yeah, I made it all the way up to the top, and I bagged this 14er. So 14,000 foot mountains take a while. You can imagine. Usually you do one in a day, maybe two if you're really in good shape. Well, Kite Lake's a unique place. We're already at 12,000 feet and you're at the base of four 14,000 foot mountains. And so we had this plan. Okay, we're going to go to Kite Lake and we're going to climb three 14ers, maybe four if we really get it done right. If we get up early and really hit them all. That was our goal. And we're super excited about it. We'd love to hike. So that night, there we are in Kite Lake, this beautiful, gorgeous campground. We go to sleep in our tent. And all of a sudden, the wind starts howling in the middle of the night. And then this pelting of rain starts hitting our tent. And I can start hearing the tent pins being pulled up, you know? And I'm like, oh, but my wife and I were not sleeping at that point, you can imagine. But neither one of us wanted to get outside the tent to figure out what's going on. And we just wanted to stay in the tent. And then, of course, you just more and more, the wind just was howling. Literally, the tent was like wrapped around my wife and I. I was convinced if we weren't there, the tent would just fly away because the wind was that strong. Here we are at the base of these 14,000 foot mountains, and the wind was just howling. So we kind of just suffered through it, and finally the wind kind of died down. Finally the rain kind of quit, and eventually I zipped out of the tent, walked out, just kind of assessed the damage, and I just looked up, and I was just, boom. I looked at the stars, and they were unbelievable. They were so bright. Here we were, 12,000 feet, and they were so bright, I feel like you could touch them. There just was thousands of stars. I don't know if you've ever experienced that before, where the stars are so brilliant. It was breathtaking. Here we were in the middle of this crazy storm that we just experienced, a terrible night's sleep. It was ruining our schedule to climb all four 14ers, and God's beauty was on clear display. It was breathtaking. And the reason I share that with you today, because all of us face storms in life, as I said earlier, right? I don't know if you think about this, but we can't control when storms come most of the time. We certainly can't control the types of storms that hit us. We can't control the duration of those storms, oftentimes. We can't control, what kind of storms hit us when. But we all face storms. They hit us at all times. So we can't control storms in life most of the time. But we can control is our response to the storms, right? While we can't control the chaos around us and the storms around us, we can control the chaos inside of us. I really believe that. And so what I've been learning as I've been thinking back and reflecting on this past December is that there is, even in the midst of storms, a reason for hope. Hope, in fact, I believe is found when we bring our uncertain future to an unchanging God. Hope is found, I believe, when we bring our uncertain future to an unchanging God. That's where we find hope. Because honestly, it's pretty hopeless if you think life is just a series of storms and you just have no control over it and you're just kind of pushed around with no real reason, no more rhyme or reason to it. It's kind of hopeless, isn't it? But if there's a God in the midst of it and he can help you make sense of it, now there's hope. And I found there is hope. In the midst of the storm, we need an anchor, right? Every ship needs an anchor in a storm. My tent needed those tent pins to anchor us down, and they were pulled up. But in the midst of a storm, you need an anchor. And Psalm 16 shouts to us that God is our anchor. He is our shelter. He is our refuge, David says. And then as he goes on in Psalm 16, he begins to list all these things of how he relates to God and how he rejects other so-called small g gods. And then let's skip to verse 7 and 8 and listen to how David begins to describe God. He says this, I will praise the Lord who counsels me. Even at night, my heart instructs me. I love that. And then he says this, I keep my eyes always on the Lord. With him at my right hand, I will not be shaken. Now, let me just give you one of, there's so many good things in this two in these two passages, but let me just start with at my right hand. Back then, that was a reference to someone who's in the military. Because back then, when you were a warrior, if you were a military person, you would hold your sword in your right hand and your shield in your left. So therefore, the person on your right, at your right-hand side, was defending you with their shield. So what is David saying? He says, God is at my right hand side. He's defending me in the midst of my battle. He's putting his shield up. So it doesn't mean that God delivers him from the battle per se, but he protects him within the battle. He's shielding him, defending him while he's fighting his battles. That's what David is saying. And because of that, David's like, I can handle this with God's help. With him defending me, I can move forward and face my battles. And that reminds me and gives me hope that when I have storms in my life, just as that tent wrapped itself around Lee and I have felt this past month that God wrapped his arms around my family and I as we went through storm after storm after storm. God was there. I never felt like he left us. I didn't always have the answers of why do we get hit so hard? But I just knew that God was with us and he wrapped his arms around us. He was defending us in the midst of our storm. And I wonder today, as you look back at your 2017, can you say that too? That God was protecting you. God is protecting you. His presence is real. Is he at your right side, as David says? Here's what I found. You know, just as I walked out of that tent and saw this beautiful midnight sky, and it was just gorgeous. The beauty of God was just clearly on display. I've learned that even in storms, we can find beauty. And it's hard, I'll be honest, it's hard to find beauty, but it's there. And one of the most beautiful things is God's presence, that he promises us that we'll never face a storm alone, that he's always with us. And that's why I can have hope, that when we give our uncertain future to an unchanging God, hope arises within us, that God gives us hope. And that's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful thing. The author of Hebrews describes it this way. Hebrews 6:19 up on the screen says this, we have this hope as an anchor for the soul, firm and secure. The hope is that God will never leave us. God will never forsake us. God will walk through us in the storms of life. And that anchors us. So here's a challenge, or here's a question. As you think about 2018, who is your anchor in life? Or what is your anchor? My guess is if you're like me, we're tempted to lean into our strengths. So maybe your anchor, if you're really honest, this last year, your anchor was your GPA or your wonderful personality or your physical strength and ability, your intellectual prowess, your ability to make money, your job, your relationships, circumstantial, all of those wonderful things, all wonderful things to have. But they're all based on circumstances at some level, right? What if 2018, you had all those wonderful things, but on top of that, you went to another level to say, my anchor needs to be in God, who is not based on circumstances, that God is unchanging. He's the same God yesterday, today, and will be forever. And that's where my anchor will be locked in. That's what my anchor needs to be, is God, beyond my circumstances, because who knows what 2018 will bring. Your circumstances can and probably will change. But God never changes. And if he's our anchor, that's where we get our hope. That's firm and secure. And so maybe this year, you can make God your anchor in a way that you've never done before. That you could lean your full weight on God this year. That's what David is encouraging us to do through this psalm. Because hope is found when we bring our uncertain future to an unchanging God. That's where we find hope. You know, there's a Sunday school class, and this teacher actually asked a little boy, do you know where the Lord lives? And the little boy says, well, yeah, I know where the Lord lives. He lives in my bathroom. And, you know, the Sunday school teacher's like, what do you mean he lives in your bathroom? That's weird. He's like, no. Every Sunday morning, my dad bangs on the bathroom door and says, good Lord, are you still in there? So, okay, that was a little cheesy, I know. But the reason I share that is because the Psalms have been written as songs to remind the people of God of who God is and where God is. Namely, that God has never left them. That God is still here. God is with them. God has not forsaken them. And so these Psalms remind us, the people of God, that God is there. We don't have to go looking in some bathroom or looking in some weird spot. God is here. God is with us. In fact, I love it. You know, Christmas, we just celebrated Christmas. And one of the key themes of Christmas is Emmanuel. When God sent his son Jesus, God with us occurs, and God is still with us. And we need to be reminded of that, particularly when storms come. I think that's when we need to be reminded the most that God is with us. Because when storms and life don't turn out the way we hoped, we start doubting God's presence, right? We start doubting, is God with us? And we start thinking, what did I do wrong, God? Why are you letting this happen, right? We need to remember in storms specifically that God is with us. He's not left us. And that's what David is reminding us today. See, these songs came out of real life, hands-on encounters and experiences with the living God. This particular psalm was written by David. And David, you know his story, many of you. It's up and down, and he wasn't perfect, and he had problems, and he had major storms in his life. And yet the constant in his life was his relationship with God. So much so that it's described as David, he has a heart after God, that he had this rock-solid relationship. God was his anchor through all of life. And that's what kept him solid. So here as David begins to recount his faith and how he related to God, he continues on. So now let's jump to verse 9, the next verse over. David says these words, "Therefore my heart is glad and my tongue rejoices. My body also will rest secure because you will not abandon me to the realm of the dead, nor will you let your faithful one see decay." Why? Verse 11, "Because you make known to me the path of life. You will fill me with joy in your presence, with eternal pleasures at your right hand." He goes from his physical body, his heart and mind, his tongue, to eternal pleasures, eternity. That's the kind of relationship that David had with God. And let me just pull out two more Hebrew words because I'm not done spitting yet. So there's a couple more. The word in verse 11, path, is orach. Orach, the path, literally means a well-worn path that many people would traverse. We would use the word highway today. So highway is a well-worn path, right? We all drive on highways for the most part, right? But figuratively, it means a way or mode of living, a lifestyle, a way of character. So what David is saying is that, God, you have showed us how we should live our life. Not that you filled in all the blanks of what our life is going to be like, but you've shown us, God, how we ought to live our lives. And of course, Jesus picks up on that. Think about all the things that Jesus said about himself. Some of the things he would say is, "I am the way. I am the truth," Jesus said. "I am the life," Jesus said. So Jesus didn't say, "Hey, come follow the path of life." He says, "No, I am the path. I'm the way. Follow me." Jesus gave us the best example of what it meant to follow God and what our life should be marked by when we have a relationship with God. He is the way, the truth, and the life. And so he echoes what David is saying. And David is saying, "God, you have shown us how to live our life. You've shown us the path of life." In fact, it's really, when you think about this, one of the books that comes to mind is C.S. Lewis's book, The Horse and His Boy. And how many people are C.S. Lewis's fans? Okay, good. I think it may be required to come to Capitol and like C.S. Lewis, because Troy and I quote him so much. So it's required. I don't know if you know that, but add that to the requirements of joining the church. No, just totally kidding. But The Horse and the Boy is a great book. I encourage you to read it. It often gets lost in the Chronicles of Narnia series, but it's one of those books. And in this book, really quickly, it's about a boy named Shasta who never knew his mom or dad and was raised by this mean fisherman, and he eventually escapes through a horse that talks to him. And so he and his horse have this really, really special relationship. And then they go on all these adventures, but it's filled with all kinds of near mishaps, near death experiences, and all these challenges that Shasta faces. And in this book, there's this moment where Shasta is by himself, just he and his horse. It's dark, it's night, and he's just overwhelmed with grief about how tough his life has been, how difficult. He's just ready to just to throw in the towel. He was just so sick of his life. Feels like he's just always had the unfair end of the stick, if you will, with life. And as he's kind of walking along on his horse, I should say, and they're just going along the path, they hear something. And it sounds like a voice, but then it sounds like breathing. But it's not human breathing. It's like an animal breathing. And he wasn't sure. Like, this is not just any animal. That sounds like a scary animal, like a lion. And he finally gets up the courage to ask, "Who are you?" And the voice comes back. Sure enough, it's a lion, and it's Aslan, the lion. And if you know the Chronicles of Narnia series, Aslan is the symbol of God in all of these stories, or the symbol of Christ more specifically. And here Aslan begins to talk to Shasta the boy, and Shasta begins to realize, okay, this lion's not going to eat me, so maybe I can share a little bit about my story, and begins to talk about his life and how he never knew his mom and dad and how his life was so difficult and how he had all these lions that came into his life and there's all these scary things that happen. And Aslan's like, "Yes, I know, I know, I know." He's like, "How do you know?" He's like, "Because I am the lion. I've been in your life the entire time. I know exactly. And he starts listing all these things that he knew about Shasta's life because he was there every step of the way. In fact, right then, as they're, he's on his horse and Aslan's on his left-hand side, his voice keeps him on the path. Shasta doesn't even realize that he's walking right on the edge of a cliff on the left-hand side of this cliff and he would fall off. But Aslan, with his voice, keeps him on the path, even in the dark. I share that because there are times in life we look back and things don't always make sense, right? We don't always have answers for why things happen. But I've learned if we're open to it and we trust God and we say, God, he can handle our questions, by the way. And we can just go to God and say, God, why did this happen? What is up? It's okay. That's what the Psalms are filled with. David did that. He had lots of questions for God. That's okay. God can handle it. But here's the good news is that God has never left us. God is with us. Even in those moments where you feel like, oh, God missed that one. There's no way God will allow that to happen. No, he's there. He's with us always. And he can continue to lead us down the path of life. And that gives us hope. David is reminding us that God has never left us. He's shown us the path of life. And then he goes to another level. He says, actually, not only that, but you will fill me with joy, what? In your presence. So he goes from, here's the path of life, God, you're with me, to I'm filled with joy. My life is just full of your joy because of your presence. Another great Hebrew word, it's the word panaka. It's from the word panim. And this word is, could be translated presence or face. It's the same word, face or countenance. And I love this. So picture this. So David is saying, he has such a close relationship with God. It's as if God's face is shining on David. And that fills him with joy because he sees the face of God in his life. Can you ever say that about your relationship with God? That you just feel so close to him. You literally feel like his face is shining on you. Wouldn't we all kind of aspire to that, right? In fact, the Bible's really clear that we're made in God's image. And among other things, what that means is that we are unique among all creation, not plants, not animals. We are made in God's image, which means we can have a personal relationship with God, the one who created us. That's what it means to be a human being. You know, God is not just some force of energy. God is a person, Scripture tells us, a person with whom we can have a relationship. And that goes to the very core of who we are as human beings. And so David takes the next level. Not only do I have a relationship, but God's face literally shining on me. In fact, I'm reminded of the story, many of you know, of a story of Moses, where he spends time on the mountain. And he was in the presence of God, whatever that meant, right? Same word, presence, face. And then what happens when Moses comes down off the hill? His face is so bright, it's shining. They had to put something over it to cover it because it's so bright because he was in the presence of God and it reflected off of Moses' face. Isn't that fascinating? So David really picks up the same idea that that's why he's filled with joy, that no matter what happens in his life, he knows that God's presence is with him so much so that he feels his face shining on David's life. God's presence really makes a difference. Let me put it a different way. You know, Emma is my oldest daughter, and she's 17, which I can't believe. But I remember when she was a little kid, she had these funny fears about going to the basement, particularly at night. And you would think, oh, it's like the boogeyman down there, or a ghost down there, or Bigfoot, or something really scary, right? But no, she was afraid of robbers. And I know it sounds really weird. Like, what were you teaching her? I was trying to figure out why was robbers such a scary thing for her. So she would never want to go down at night because there was robbers down in the basement. And the best I could put together was often we would lock the doors at night and make sure her windows were locked and closed at night because we didn't want any robbers to come in the house. It was a great parenting moment by me, not so much. But anyway, so she picked up robbers are really bad and robbers hide out in the basement at night. So I remember she was playing down in the basement. She had toys all over. And I said, you need to go down and clean up your toys. And she refused. And she's a pretty good kid, even then. But I was like, Emma, you need to go down there. I was like, no, I can't go down there. Dad, I can't. I was like, why? She's like, there's robbers down there. I tried to reason with her. You were just down there a few minutes ago. There was no robbers then. When did they arrive? No, there's robbers. I won't go. She was frozen at the top of the stairs. I literally had to pick her up, and we went down the stairs. And then we began to pick up the toys. And it was amazing. There was no robbers down there. It was incredible. And she calmed down and she was fine. Went back up the stairs. She went to sleep. What was the difference? It wasn't that factually there really were robbers down there and all of a sudden magically disappeared when I went down there. No. And it wasn't that I took them out, although that would be kind of fun. No, it wasn't that at all. It was that they were never there, but it was all in her perception. And she was with somebody that would protect her. My presence made all the difference. She was okay if I was down there with her. She just wouldn't go by herself. And I think about how we learn as kids and we grow up, who we can trust and whose presence really makes a difference in our life. And what if God is the one? His presence is what we want the most. And his presence helps us get down the stairs of life to the scary robbers in our life. Because as we grow up, it's not about robbers in the basement. It's about the really scary things. Like when your doctor says you have cancer. That kind of scary stuff. Or when your relationship, your marriage is falling apart and you're worried about the D word, divorce. Or you're worried about your GPA just tanked and you're worried about not getting accepted into the graduate school you want. Or maybe you had this dream that when you grew up, you would be a certain person and you realize you may not have the grades. You may not have the intellectual ability to get to that next level. There's real fears that happen in life, right? Maybe it is a health issue. And you're really finding your body is just not holding up and you're scared what that means to you. Maybe you always had a desire to have this relationship with your kids. And as soon as they grew up, they just checked out and they have just cut themselves off from you. I don't know what it is for your life, but I know we all have these real fears. And what can happen is they can hijack our faith. They can freeze us at the top of our stairs, so to speak, and we can't move forward because the fear is actually holding us back. See, the Psalms are not so much about your life needs to be pain-free, or it's not about having less problems. The Psalm is about having more of God's presence. That's the difference, is God's presence in our life. And so what our prayer should be, not so much that God, get rid of all the problems in my life. No, God, give me more of your presence. Because I know I'm going to face problems. I'm going to face storms. So I need more of your presence. That's what David is telling us. See, hope is found when we put our uncertain future in the unchanging hands of God. And say, God, fill me with your presence. Wrap me around with your arms. I need your presence because this storm is hard and this battle I'm facing is really scary. God's presence can make all the difference. You know, as David, we look at this psalm. What I love about the psalm, what's so encouraging to me, is this is not just about David and his relationship with God. We actually go beyond this. This psalm actually foreshadows Christ. Let me share what I mean. Verse 10, we read it earlier. Let's read it again. Because you will not abandon me to the realm of the dead, David says, nor will you let your faithful one see decay. This wasn't just about David. This is about Christ. Why do we know that? Because in the New Testament, Peter in Acts 2, when the first church is starting, he begins to talk about who this Christ was and what he did. And he quotes from Psalm 16. And he basically says, because David foreshadowed so thousands of years ago that Jesus would not die and stay in the grave, that he would be resurrected. He wouldn't face decay. He would actually be raised to new life. He uses this passage. So David is actually, through God's inspiration, giving us the future of what God promised to do, and he came through and actually did what he promised. And so why is that so significant? It gives us encouragement. It gives us the hope we need to know that when God says something, he's going to do it. When God promises, he's going to come through. God is not like a man or a woman. When we say something, maybe we do it or maybe we don't. No, God always does what he says. He always comes through when he promises. And this is proof of it in Psalm 16. He sent his son Jesus Christ and he did not stay in the grave. He was raised to new life. And that's the basis of our faith. See, hope is found when we bring our uncertain future to an unchanging God. It can make all the difference in 2018 if we really believe that. In fact, I love how Paul kind of sums it up, if you will, in Romans 15:13, up here on the screen. He says this, may the God of hope fill you with all joy and peace as you trust in him so that you may overflow with hope by the power of the Holy Spirit. I love that image of overflowing, like it's so effusive, it's just coming out of you, this hope that's from God and the Holy Spirit. You know, one of the songs we sang was Through It All, but it had this element in it that talked about it is well with my soul. Some of you may or may not know the old hymn, It Is Well. Some of you remember the It Is Well, the old hymn. Yeah, grew up with that maybe if you grew up in church. Well, that song, this is a true story. It Is Well, the original hymn was written by a guy named Horatio Spafford. And you can Google his story because it's fascinating. I encourage you to do it. He was a wealthy businessman and a lawyer from Chicago. He had four daughters. Seemed like he had everything going for him. His life was perfect, it seemed like. And then the great Chicago fire happened. And a lot of businesses just lost everything, including him. He lost most of what he had in life physically in terms of material wealth. And then he decided to send his family, and they were going to go to England to kind of recover from all of these problems. And then at the last minute, he was detained and had to come back and do some business in Chicago. So he sent his daughters and his wife ahead of him to England. So they board this ship. They're heading to England. And along the way in the ocean, they run into another ship. Their ship goes into the ocean. His four daughters drown. And his wife barely makes it and it survives and goes to England. And of course, he hears about this. Can you imagine how overwhelmed you'd be? I mean, this is a true story. So he finally says, I need to reunite with my wife. So he gets on a boat and goes to England. And as the story goes, as he goes to the part of the ocean where he was told his daughters drowned, he begins to write this hymn that we call It Is Well. And I just want to read a couple of the verses from the original hymn. It goes like this. When peace like a river attendeth my way, when sorrows like sea billows roll, whatever my lot, thou has taught me to say, it is well with my soul. Now, I know a lot of you are parents in this room. Can you even imagine losing one child? I can't even imagine that. Let alone four? Are you kidding me? Four? And yet, not only that, but Horatio Spafford didn't run away from God. Now, who knows what happened in his heart and his soul, but at the end of the day, he ran towards God in the middle of a storm. And he writes this psalm about it is well with my soul. Where did that come from? I don't know if I could say that if I lost four of my daughters and barely almost lost my wife and then lost my business and lost all my material wealth. I long for the faith of Horatio Spafford, who despite circumstances was rock solid. God was his anchor, right? And his hope was in something bigger than life, bigger than the storms of his life, bigger than all the problems he faced. And that kept him solid. And he could say with a straight face, it is well with my soul. So as I close, you know, we talked about 2018 and New Year's resolutions and this idea of having one word. Right? This idea, you have one word for the year that you focus on. The whole year kind of wraps around this theme of this one word. So I want to give you a word. So if you don't have a word yet, here's one of your words. Or if you already have one, it's okay to have two. It's not against the rules. You can have two words. Okay. All right. So no rules are broken. But no, seriously, here, what if your one word this year, 2018, is hope? And I'm not talking Pollyannish, steroid-filled, self-help talk, you know, hope. No. I'm talking real, raw, honest hope that is not based on any circumstance in your life. It's based on who God is, period. So that no matter what happens this year, and my hope is you have an incredible year, a year of adventure and excitement and blessing, but I have a feeling you're going to face a few storms this year. Just that's part of life. So regardless of your circumstances, may this year be a year where hope is your one word, that you really have hope. In fact, even better, what if you're overflowing with hope this year? Because of a God you believe in that's bigger than your circumstances. I think if you live that way, if we all live that way, I think people would actually notice that. I just sense we're living in a culture and certainly in a world where hope is just kind of fading away for all of us. Whether it be some of your best friends or that are just tanking their faith or their life or the political process or all the sexual harassment scandals that people used to look up to and used to like and now they're, you know, jettisoned to the side. I don't know what it is, but I just have a sense we're losing hope in this world. And so we need to look something beyond this world for real hope. And what if that is our word because we believe in a God who sent his son Jesus Christ and raised him from the dead. And that gives us new life for all of us. Because hope, it really is found when we give an uncertain future to an unchanging God. It can change and transform our entire year if we have that as our focus. May it be so for all of us this year. Let's pray. Heavenly Father, thank you so much for the reminder in Psalm 16 that you are with us, you love us, and even despite our circumstances, that we can have hope today. In fact, I pray wherever we are in our spiritual journey, wherever we are in a relationship with you, whatever kind of storms we're experiencing, either we're doing great this year, we can't wait for 2018, or we had a brutal 2017 and we just crawled into 2018 because it was so bad. I don't know where people are, but you do, God. And I pray you draw all of us to yourself. Give us the courage this year as we launch into a brand new year. May hope be the one word, may it be the one description that marks us this year. Would hope be the thing that really separates us this year more than any other year up to this point? And it wouldn't just be Pollyannish hope or empty hope. It truly would be hope in you as our anchor, that we can trust you regardless of our circumstances, that you are good even when life is unfair. And that would anchor us this year as we face all that we have, both the good and the wonderful and the bad and the ugly. May we find our hope and place our uncertain future in the hands of an unchanging God. May that be true of us this year. We ask in Jesus' name. Amen. All right, so it wouldn't be right without giving you homework. It's the first of the year. I got to give you some homework, right? I like this. One person said, right. Okay, good. All right, just give you homework. We'll be out of here. First is that verse I mentioned before, Romans 15:13. Love this verse. May the God of hope fill you with all joy and peace as you trust in him so that you may overflow with hope. Great verse. Memorize it, I encourage you to. Put it on your Instagram. Put it on your screensaver, wherever. It's a great verse. Second thing I would say, it's not up here on the screen, but I encourage you to reread Psalm 16. I didn't have a chance to go through the whole psalm, and there's so much in there, so I encourage you to reread Psalm 16. Here's two other books. Max Lucado is a writer that's really easy to go through. It's very fun to read. He's got a book called You'll Get Through This, and it's about facing problems and storms in life. I encourage you, it's a quick read, but it's a fantastic book. I encourage you to get it. The second one is this, Billy Graham. I think everyone knows who Billy Graham is. He's 99 years old. He's still alive, but a lot of us don't read his books, but he actually has a book called The Reason for My Hope. I encourage you to pick it up. Think about a guy who's lived pretty much his full life, as far as we can tell, always connected to God and having this deep relationship with God. A person who God's used to impact millions of people. Many of us in this room are impacted directly by Billy Graham. Read his book, The Reason for My Hope. Fantastic book. And then finally, of course, the main message will be up here on Instagram, plus the one word hope. You can put that on your Instagram, Twitter feed, wherever you like to do. I appreciate you listening today. Thanks for being here on the first Sunday of the year. My hope and prayer is that you will place your uncertain future in an unchanging God's hands. Thanks for listening.
Please stand. My friends, I'm glad you came today. Frankly, some of you came bearing a burden. This is not the way you planned to start 2018. But things changed. And life's hard. If that's you, I pray you find this God of hope. In fact, if you'd like for someone to pray for you before you leave, come to the front. At the close of the service, we'll have some people standing here waiting for you. They are here to pray. So make your way up and invite one of them to do so. My prayer for all of you is this. May you find hope by bringing your uncertain future to your unchanging God. May you find ways to keep your eyes on him every day of this year so that he might make known to you the path of life as he fills you with joy in his presence. Thanks for coming today. Grace and peace.